So before I talk about this is right, this is I've got my talk now up in front of me. Before I talk about appreciative joy and appreciating ourselves and the how why and how of that, I just want to say a little bit more about why I savor the good generally. And I think I need to say this over and over again because I need to hear it over and over again because like many of us, I have been fed my whole life the conditioning that my self-worth is related to my productivity, not to my joy. And this sense of getting my to-do list checked off is sort of the most urgent thing to quell my feelings of anxiety. But in fact, what is going to help me and you and us, and this is a teaching of the Buddha too, to really be nourished so that we can meet the difficult things and also so that there's a sense of meaning and delight in our lives is to be noticing and taking in the good. So I want to say more about that. So this is a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh. Life is filled with suffering, but it is also filled with many wonders, like the blue sky, the sunshine, the eyes of a baby. To suffer is not enough. We must also be in touch with the wonders of life. They're within us and around us, everywhere, anytime. And this is a quote from Karen Wallrand from her book, The Lightmaker's Manifesto. Karen Wallrand is a lawyer, a social activist, a spiritual practitioner. She's a powerhouse. She has a new book out, which I haven't read yet, but I'm going to read, about joy as we age, joy through a within aging. So Walrond, Walrond, Karen Walrond. This is a quote from her. I will never apologize for embracing joy and beauty, even when the world is falling apart. Because joy and beauty are fuel for my activism. And that's really a wise source of fuel. Because many of us, myself included, at times, we use our grief and our anger as our fuel. But that's a type of fuel that burns out really quickly. Well, when we come back to being replenished by the good, then we're really nourished, and then we're more grounded and more spacious. Another remarkable spiritual practitioner, teacher, social activist, Dr. Barbara Holmes, says, "Our current circumstances require resilience and the steadfast belief that joy is a healing inner event and a spiritual practice." And I think that's brilliant to call joy a healing inner event. And as we practice tonight, and we will, I'll bring practice in as we talk about appreciative joy and self-appreciation. As we practice, or even as you think about, the blessings, the good things in your life, we can notice how that actually lands in the body and in the emotions as a healing inner event. To not trivialize the good, but really understand that as we take it in, as we're conscious of it, we're restoring ourselves. And we can't, and there's no point in waiting for this. Author and another spiritual guide, Paulo Coelho, says, "And one day I understood that it is no one's job but mine to take care of myself and make myself happy." And finally, Maya Angelou, "If you must look back, do so forgivingly. If you must look forward, do so prayerfully. However, the wisest thing you can do is be present in the present gratefully." I think that's really powerful advice. If you must look back, do so forgivingly. Like, work skillfully with our minds. If you must look forward, do so prayerfully. However, the wisest thing you can do is be present in the present gratefully, bringing in appreciation. So, one more little piece. Just in praise of joy and good things generally. This is a poem called The Word by Tony Hoagland, Hoagland, The Word. Down near the bottom of the crossed out list of things you have to do today, between green thread and broccoli, you find that you have penciled sunlight. Resting on the page, the word is beautiful. It touches you as if you had a friend and sunlight were a present he had sent from someplace distant, as this morning, to cheer you up and remind you that among your duties, pleasure is a thing that also needs accomplishing. Do you remember that time and light are kinds of love? And love is no less practical than a coffee grinder or a safe spare tire. Tomorrow you may be utterly without a clue, but today you get a telegram from the heart in exile, proclaiming that the kingdom still exists, the king and queen alive, still speaking to their children, to anyone among them who can find the time to sit out in the sun and listen. So we're really admonished, even, you know, like the activist Karen Walrin says, even in these times, these urgent times where the world is falling apart, joy and beauty are our fuel for activism. Okay, so appreciative joy and appreciating ourselves. So appreciative joy, you may have heard it as sympathetic joy. It's appreciating the good in and the well-being of others. A vicarious joy. And you can think of a parent observing a growing child's accomplishments and successes. It's a pure joy that's unaffected by self-interest, just being lifted up because they're happy. For me, I have my partner, my wife, and I have a little rescue dog. Her name is Kimba, and she's half pit bull and half chihuahua. And yes, it's true, that's a real thing. It's actually not uncommon. And she is so happy every time she goes on a walk. She wags her way through the walk. And just walking behind her, watching her wag along, you know, her tail wagging the whole time we're walking, brightens my whole day. And what is happening there? You know, what's happening is she's happy and I'm happy she's happy. And I'm sure you know this. I'm sure you've experienced this. You know, this is when we see a being experiencing joy and we are lifted by it. That's mudita. Mudita is the Pali word for appreciative joy. And yet it's considered the most difficult of the four traditional heart practices for us to do, for people to do. So the four traditional heart practices are loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. And of the four, Appreciative joy is considered the most difficult to practice because of our tendency to compare and to experience the opposite of appreciative joy, which is envy. When in Buddhism we talk about freedom and emptiness, interbeing, no self, we're talking about how, in fact, we're a part of nature, we're deeply and profoundly interconnected with everything, and we're much less a self than we think we are. However, we have so much conditioning for our minds to be continually churning up a sense of separate self, and one of the primary ways we do that is by comparing ourselves to others. Better than, worse than, and even same, even equal to, are different ways that the mind tries to assess who we are in relationship to everybody else in the world. And there's a lot of suffering that comes from that. When we go into better than, the kind of arrogance and condescension and cruelty that can come from that. And when we go into worse than, the kind of lack of confidence, the freezing up of our talents because we don't believe they're worth putting out into the field. It's a lot of suffering and tragedy that comes from comparing mind. And even the equal to doesn't get at kind of the magic and the interconnection and the just even equal to is still creating a self. And when we create a solid separate self, we're not perceiving what's really true, which is that we're all in this together. And we suffer with those beliefs. And it's really common. It's what our minds do. And one of the best ways to work with the comparing mind is to practice mindfulness. With mindfulness, first of all, we drop into the present moment. And then secondly, we can name thinking for what it is, thinking. And then whatever specific kind of thinking. So if what's happening right now is selfing, we can name it, oh, selfing, or oh, there's comparing mind, there's envy. And when we're in an observing witness capacity with our thoughts, we're no longer as identified with them. We can get a little bit of space, a little bit of freedom. Then, when we take it to the next step and we begin to like be lifted up by and appreciate the joy of others, there's this possibility of really increasing our joy. The Dalai Lama said, if we can learn to savor the good fortune of others, we can increase our own well-being by, he said 7 billion, because he said this like 20 years ago. Now it would be 8 billion. So bringing in this sense of appreciative joy, and the teaching is to do this is to start where it's easy, which is always the instruction. Start where it's easiest. And so that being would be what's called in the ancient Buddhist texts, a happy friend. But you can think of a being that you know during a happy moment. You know, we all experience joys and sorrows, so nobody is happy all the time. But there could be somebody who you experience as cheerful often, or maybe even you don't know them personally, but you've seen them happy, or you can easily imagine them happy. And bringing that sense of them to mind, maybe a visual image of them if that's possible and easily accessible for you, or a felt sense. So join me in this, bringing to mind this happy friend, cheerful person, someone who naturally makes you smile. And it could be a person, but it also could be an animal, a pet or a friend's pet. And really enjoying and savoring their good fortune, imagining them doing something they enjoy doing or might enjoy doing. Just happy, like my dog when she's walking, or a child playing, or your friend enjoying their hobby, or whatever it may be. And the traditional phrase for appreciative joy practice is, may your happiness and joy continue. May they increase. And offering this wish from a really sincere place, like, were it possible, wouldn't that be wonderful if this being's happiness continued and even increased? And there's an ancient Sinhalese version of these phrases that I really love and I want to offer to you. And Sinhalese is just the language that was spoken hundreds of years ago in Sri Lanka. How wonderful you are in your being. I delight you are here. I take joy in your good fortune. May your happiness continue. And as you do this practice, it can be helpful to really bring your awareness down into your heart area and feel in there. So there's these various components, to appreciative joy practice. There's thinking of the being, imagining them happy. There's the words that you use, which are really up to you, but essentially you're expressing your gladness that they're doing well, that they're happy in your mind's eye. So there's the imagining the being or getting a felt sense. There's the phrases. So the traditional phrases, may your happiness and joy continue, may they increase. Or the Sinhalese phrase, which I'll continue with, but I'll say it again now. How wonderful you are in your being. I delight you are here. I take joy in your good fortune. May your happiness continue. And then the third component is touching down into your heart. And it's whatever's there is totally fine. And it's good, it's interesting, it can be helpful information. Are we beginning, are we moving in the direction of plugging into nourishing our own hearts as we celebrate the joy of another? So again, bringing this being to mind, see if you can imagine them happy. And I'll offer these phrases again, and you can silently repeat them and send them to this being. How wonderful you are in your being. I delight you are here. I take joy in your good fortune. May your happiness continue. And feeling into your heart. So the way the practice goes traditionally is that then we offer these same wishes to what's called a benefactor. This is a being who has lifted us up in some way in our lives, given us guidance, support, friendship. This may be the same being you're already working with, or it may be someone else or another animal or pet or creature or tree or whatever. So bring to mind another being, or you can continue working with the one that you have in mind. Create a visual image of this being in a contented and happy space. Feel into your own gladness at their well-being. And offering them perhaps some language to express that. How wonderful you are in your being. I delight you are here. I take joy in your good fortune. May your happiness continue. I'll just ring the bell. This time only ringing it once. Yeah, so what did you notice with that practice? Feel welcome to put something in the chat about what you noticed with that practice of deliberately cultivating appreciative joy. Felt happy. Yeah, thanks, Charlie. Feels the same as metta. Not sure of the difference. Great. I'm gonna bookmark that and come back to it. Made me smile. Easier for friends. Yes. And it's wise to stay with the, well, let me come back to the ones where I want to comment on, but let me just read these aloud. Okay. So feels the same as metta, made me smile, easier with friends, physical warmth, lighter and freer. Beautiful. Thank you, Nathan. Notice myself smiling. Yes. Feelings of warmth inside me. Beautiful. Sometimes it's easier to feel joy of others. Oh, that's great. Yeah. So can be. Yeah. Thank you. So just winding backwards here a little bit, Kate's comment, feels the same as metta, not sure of the difference. So in metta practice, we're wishing them well-being in general. May you be safe, may you be peaceful, may you be healthy, may you be at ease, just allowing our hearts to love in a general sense. And really, compassion is that same love directed towards suffering, and appreciative joy is that same love directed towards well-being. So it is metta, you're right. It's just specified for the blessing, and it's a really beautiful practice for us because it allows us to deliberately override any kind of envy or insufficiency or comparing mind that can come up. And it can even come up with friends, unfortunately, because of the way the human mind works. And John says, seeing Nathan's daughter eating her snack. Was your daughter on screen, Nathan, and I missed it? Oh, phooey. Seeing Nathan's daughter eating her snack, checking out the Zoom faces, and walking away with happy hop mudita. Beautiful. Thank you, John. Grateful and love to others, and bring the same to ourselves. Yeah. Thank you so much, Nancy. Yes, exactly. That's where we're headed tonight. We're going to work with ourselves too. Yes, so you were right, Kate, to notice that mudita is similar to metta. It's that same energy of friendliness. It's just really honing in on joy. And so it has two fabulous effects on us, or it can, when we don't get snagged, by a contraction or not being ready to go there. And when our hearts are opened by the joy, one is that we then deliberately override the comparing mind, which is fantastic, teaching the mind how to do that, absolutely fantastic for our well-being. And we tap into joy generally. And like I was saying earlier about all the forms of contentment and joy, they nourish us. And remember that quote I read you earlier about joy or happiness being our capacity, joy or happiness being a healing inner event. So maybe you could feel that with this. So this is one practice, again, out of a palette of practices where we're intentionally savoring the good. Only in this practice, we're intentionally sa savoring other people's good, or animals, the well-being of others. When we're able to actually take it in, it's a healing inner event. It's nourishing. And we can feel that. You can feel it, and I can see it in what you wrote here. So we get nourished. Back to that Dalai Lama quote about how we, expand our capacity for joy by 7 billion. We get nourished when we learn how to do this. It's a really valuable practice. The other thing I wanted to touch in on was comment I think Phil made, but I need to find it, about, oh yeah, easier for friends. Totally. Totally easier for friends. And it's really wise to stay there in the territory of where it's easy for a while. Because, like, if I go, so like with the other heart practices, you probably know this, but some of you may not, so it's worth repeating. The traditional practice goes, we bring somebody to mind, whether we're working with appreciative joy or any of the other heart practices, we bring somebody to mind, imagine them with as much detail as possible, and then we offer them some phrases that are in alignment with whatever the heart practice is. In this case, appreciative joy, may your happiness continue, may your happiness increase, or that beautiful one, the Sinhalese one I was leading us with tonight. Feel into the heart area, and we get, we hopefully feel that we don't always, but we're inclining toward or planting the seeds toward feeling this emotion of care, of joy, of compassion, of equanimity. Well, here, this emotion of the healing event of joy. Well, the plan is that we build momentum. So we start where it's easy, and then we go out to more and more challenging categories of beings. What can happen, though, is we go out, we jump too quick. Like, I would love to be able to feel joy for this person who rejected me in high school. Let me go try that. And I go try that, and my heart goes, it turns into a little rock again. That's normal, and it's okay. And what it's telling me is rewind a little bit and go where it's easy. Continue to cultivate that. I started working out with 2 pound weights, and now I'm up to 12 pound weights, but it took a lot of 2 pound weights first. And so we want to work where it's easier. And then, we can cultivate, we can, and then the it take it we can get take it to a point, and people do, where you're genuinely, authentically wishing for and being nourished by the joy of all beings, including all the difficult ones. Well, that's quite amazing, and it's not impossible. But we have to work up to it. Okay, any questions or thoughts about any of this? All right, so I'm going to move us on to the next practice. And this is the practice of self-appreciation. There is a Benedictine nun named Martina Weidecker, and she has a quote that I found sort of fascinating and alluring and very inaccessible, but I want to tell you, offer it to you. She says, "Dear God, allow me to know the truth about myself, no matter how beautiful it is." And we have a lot of conditioning around, both with the negativity bias and all of our cultural stuff. Taking in, the language of insufficiency culture, materialistic culture, where we're in order to sell us things, we have to be convinced that we're inadequate as we are. We have a lot of blocks in our minds to taking in our own good when we can, in a balanced way. Like, it's taking in our own good doesn't mean we believe we're better than others. It just means that, like all beings, we are a mixed bag, and we have good in us. And it's skillful to know and name the good, because what we appreciates, first of all. As we know and name the good in ourselves, we can savor it and appreciate it as it comes in. And it also gives us more confidence in the world when we're able to, like, know, yeah, this is a quality that I have. Okay, but just like saying that, when in my experience and trying to practice with this, is not enough, because, I don't know how it is for you, but there can be, for me at least, a kind of an abhorrence of what can smack of arrogance. And arrogance isn't anything to seek. So I learned, I did a teacher training, but I studied, and I recommend the work of Mindful Self-Compassion. Even if you just read the book, Self-Compassion by Kristen Neff. Fantastic, fantastic. And I went ahead and put one foot in front of the other and ended up doing a teacher training in it. And the way that they teach self-appreciation is not only really, I find, really helpful, so I'm excited to teach it to you, but also it's very deeply in alignment with the teachings around no self in Buddhism, in this way that there are no positive qualities that you may have that didn't come from others. Like, everything good that we have, we can find someone somewhere who supported us, who mirrored us, even if it's an author in a book, or a cat that kept us company when we were a kid. And so, as we appreciate our good qualities, we can bring to mind the beings that have supported these good qualities and honor them as much as we honor ourselves by bringing these good qualities to mind. So there's a way in which recalling our good qualities can help us appreciate our mentors, all the mentors. I had this really interesting experience with this practice, that one relative who I'd had all my life a hard, very difficult time with, not an easy relative, never considered this person to be a mentor in any way. And yet, when I considered one of my good qualities, I realized that he had it too, and that I had seen that in him and been nourished in that good quality in me had been nourished, even though this was a difficult person in my life. So there was even the possibility of some forgiveness in the honoring as I considered the connections. So I want to bring you through this practice, but I actually want to say more about it. And what I'm going to be sharing on this, again, comes from the Mindful Self-Compassion teachings. We can be grateful for many things in our lives, large and small, but we're rarely grateful for positive qualities in ourselves. We tend to criticize ourselves and focus on our inadequacies and take our good qualities for granted. This gives us a skewed perspective of who we are. Ordinarily, when we receive a compliment, it bounces right off us. But when we receive the slightest negative feedback, we fixate on it. It feels uncomfortable to even think about what's good about ourselves. And you can think about this for yourself, like you say you give an offering and you get like mostly positive feedback, and then there's like one thing someone says that's critical, and the way that our minds just like go right there and fixate on that. Oh my goodness. So again, in the chat, I want to invite you to share what do you think about why it's so hard to celebrate or be grateful for our good qualities? Why is that difficult? Deep, deep conditioning. That's right. We've been pretty explicitly taught not to do that. Yeah. The threat of narcissism. Yeah, so much shame around being selfish. And it's true. Narcissism isn't something we want to pursue. And yet, you know, owning our good qualities is an important part of getting a clear, holding a clear view of who we actually are. But yes, it's real, it's a true threat, the threat of narcissism. It can feel like boasting. Yeah. Yeah, like bragging. And there's been a lot of shaming around that. And understandably. Yeah. I'm an imposter. Yeah, so thinking of these good qualities and then this belief about being an imposter, like the good qualities are so outweighed by the challenges, all those kind of beliefs and thoughts inside. Yes, not alone with that. You are not alone. We are not alone. This is something human minds do. Being self-depreciating is looked on as being a good thing. Yes, it can be. It's interesting, isn't it, this culture? I'm thinking of the Buddhist teaching of the middle way. It's true that we don't want to get lost in narcissism and self-aggrandizement. And we see that when that happens to people, that they can cause a lot of harm, and that's obviously not a direction we want to go. But having a clear, truthful view of what is, you know, of patterns that consistently arise in us that are helpful and useful for ourselves and beings around us, having a clear perspective of that isn't the same thing as narcissism or self-aggrandizement or bragging. It's more a quiet confidence. And humility can stay in place because we're human. We're limited, we have flaws, and all of that is still true. That doesn't go away when we own our good qualities. We're just learning to take our good qualities out of the closet a little more. So, great, thank you. So it can be helpful to reflect on a couple more things regarding working with our conditioning around disowning our good qualities. One is that common humanity of it, that everyone has strengths and good qualities. So acknowledging that you or I have good qualities doesn't mean that we're superior to others. And then the second one, which is going to be part of our practice, which we'll close with in a few minutes, is interdependent causality. This is the no self part, the way in which we inter are with everything and everyone. Our strengths and good qualities are due, at least in part, to multiple factors outside ourselves, including the beneficial influence that others have had on us. By recognizing the contribution of others, we can continue to feel connected even as we recognize our strengths. Self-appreciation is not selfish. It provides the emotional buoyancy and self-confidence needed to give to others. So in that sense, it earns its place here on the palette of joy practices, because it's another practice that when we can do it, we can feel connected to others, and we can feel our physical, emotional, and mental reserves are increased. That's what these practices do. They increase our spaciousness and our energy. That's what joy does for us. So does self-appreciation. So let's try the practice. Just give it a try. Okay, so close your eyes. Let your awareness, if close your eyes if that's helpful to you. Let your awareness drop into your body. And take a moment to think about three or four things you appreciate about yourself. See if you can open to what you really deep down like about yourself. And you won't have to share this with anyone else, so please be honest. If you experience any uneasiness in this practice, please make some space for whatever you're feeling and let yourself be just as you are. Remember that you aren't saying you always show these good qualities or that you're better than others. You're simply acknowledging that this too is true. Now, please focus on one quality in particular that you appreciate. Consider if there are any people who helped you develop this good quality. Maybe friends, parents, teachers, even authors of books who had a positive impact on your life. And as you think of each positive influence, please send them some appreciation as well. When we honor ourselves, we also honor those who have helped nurture us. Let yourself savor just for this moment, feeling good about yourself. Let it soak in. And I'll ring the bell in a moment and take these last few moments here to just allow yourself to be as you are and your experience to be whatever it is. Okay, yeah, so I'd love to hear the impact of that practice. What did you notice? How did it land? And also just comparing that to the other practice where we were appreciating other beings and which one was easier. Or maybe, you know, maybe it wasn't even about that, but just any reflections are welcome. Nathan.
Thanks, Eve. I felt that I used to describe my inner qualities as strengths, and that was actually a little hard for me because naturally I would compare strengths to other people and like, oh, they have such greater strengths, so I must be weak in comparison to them. But for some reason, this tonight I heard something about good qualities, and that kind of opened things up for me. It was not so much didn't bring so much of the comparisons. It really just helped me recognize that I have some good qualities, and it's not relative to anybody else. And it was just brought to mind more of those good qualities more easily for me. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that, Nathan. That's really great for me to hear. First of all, just the power of language, right? The difference where the mind goes with the word strengths versus where the mind can go with the language with the words good qualities. And they're synonyms in many ways, and yet it really makes a huge difference. And so just noting and naming that in a general sense, that like when something isn't like the door isn't opening in some practice that's alluring, but it's not working, it could be about language. So I really appreciate your saying that. And then specifically about moving from strengths, which is language that could be, yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, well, you know, one of my qualities that I feel glad I have, which I inherited from my dad, is patience. Really thankful I have that. And yet compare myself to many people, but what comes to mind right now is the Dalai Lama, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know. And yet, if same thing, but talk about good quality, then it's not about the size of the good quality. It's just that it's there. Yeah, thanks for that. That's great. Okay, well, we have these two practices now to add. And I really encourage all of us, myself included, to take the pursuit of deliberate contentment practice, deliberate joy practice, seriously. As I was mentioning, the Buddha basically said we cannot get to freedom without it. And I think of it as the gasoline that gets the car there. We need it. So I really encourage you, whether it's through appreciative joy or self-appreciation or any of these others practices, to think about how you can have it be regularly part of life. Thank you so much. May the merit of our practice be for the benefit of all beings everywhere, ourselves included. May all beings everywhere be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings everywhere know peace and the causes of peace. All right, everybody, good night. Thank you.